Welcome into another episode of the Bengals Beat podcast. I'm Kelsey Conway here with my co-host Charlie Goldsmith, and we are here to break down everything that took place in the Bengals overtime loss to the Packers today here at Paul Brown Stadium. So much to talk about. We could start with the overtime period, which in this game, it was a game of missed kicks. How many field goals were missed today?
Five game-winning kicks.
That's insane. I've covered the NFL for, this is my seventh season covering an NFL season, and I've never seen a game like this in terms of just the amount of missed kicks to win the game. So we can talk about overtime as this podcast episode goes on, but I think we should start with the news coming out of today's game, and that is Joe Burrow was taken to a local hospital in Cincinnati following the game to be evaluated for a possible throat contusion. We were told that following the game when he was unable to do his media obligation. So there'll be more to come with that information, but wanted to make sure we let you guys know listening the latest on Joe Burrow. Charlie, you want to add anything about what you know about the throat contusion injury?
It's an injury that's much more common in car accidents and wrestling and boxing than it is in professional football, but it's something you have to take very seriously. It's an injury that's only caused by just pure blunt trauma to the neck, to the windpipe. When that happens, you have to get a CAT scan. You have to make sure there's not a fracture, because if there is a fracture, then you start talking about things like your windpipe, like your voice box. And if there's a significant fracture there, that's something that can be very serious. But as Joe Burrow is just being evaluated for a potential throat contusion, there's also the very realistic possibility that they just want to make sure that there's no significant bruising, no significant fracture, and that, you know, while Joe Burrow's speaking tone, while his breathing rhythm might have slightly changed, they have to make sure there's no fracture. It's crucial.
So now that we've gotten the Joe Burrow news out there, let's talk about the game. So let's go back to the first quarter, because this game looked like it was going to get out of hand early in terms of the Packers were just going to start running the score up on the Bengals. But everything seemed to change for Cincinnati in the second quarter when Joe Burrow made a play scrambling out of the pocket. It was an off-script play that he found Ja'Marr Chase 70 yards down the field, and it was just like that. The Bengals were back within 2 points of this game, which kind of seems to be a theme for this Bengals team. Joe Burrow finds Ja'Marr Chase on an off-schedule play, and just like that, they make a touchdown play that puts them right back in the game. And they've done that so many times, but this was especially impressive today because it really changed the momentum of this game.
This was the most unscripted deep ball that Burrow's thrown to Chase. This one, Chase ran a deep route off the left side of the field. Then when he was covered by a safety over the top, Chase recognized he was one-on-one. So he ran a second deep route over the middle and Burrow found him. It was the longest throw of Burrow's career, and it was honestly part of a theme. Burrow was good enough to win. This game was so billed as a matchup between Rodgers, the MVP, and Burrow, the rising young quarterback. And Burrow played well enough. Burrow made the throws. Burrow led the drives. He had one crucial interception, but that ended up not costing the Bengals. Joe Burrow threw the ball more than he has all season by a lot, and the game plan worked out. Burrow was efficient. He was effective. He was able to find open receivers over almost every part of the field, and he really stepped up in a way that showed his talent, his potential, and the potential of the Bengals offense, even though it didn't result in a win. And that ball to Chase was the start of it.
Yep. And when you're looking at the stat sheet, which I'm doing right now, tale of two halves. First half for the Bengals, they were woeful on third down all game. They were 1 of 5 in the first half, but they had only 25 rushing yards, which you knew the Bengals weren't going to be able to run the ball like they had been with Joe Mixon dealing with that ankle injury. He was able to go, but you knew it was going to be limited to some respect. But the Packers started to get it going with Aaron Jones, and it looked like that was kind of why they were going to explode. other than the fact that the Bengals had absolutely no answer for Davante Adams all game long. Anytime you allow a wide receiver to have over 200 receiving yards in the NFL is not a good thing at all for a defense. Granted, Davante Adams, in my opinion, is the best wide receiver, no question about it. I know that people like to say arguably. In my opinion, Davante Adams is the best wide receiver. The play he made late in the game over when he beat Jesse Bates, and I think it was Jesse Bates and I don't know who, but his probably his biggest play of the day where he just simply outran two players in Cincinnati's secondary. I think it showed what he is all about. But they, like I said, you know, it went back to that play right before the half that really changed the game. And then as the second half got going, so did the Bengals offense, and the defense started to shore some things up. The Cincinnati defense played great in the red zone against this Aaron Rodgers-led Packers team, and I think that says a lot about Cincinnati's defense. What stood out to you most about the way Cincinnati's defense adjusted to what the Packers were trying to do to them?
It reminded me of a game last season, week 16, when the Bengals beat the Texans. After the game, we got a very honest Zach Taylor, because in that game, Sam Hubbard made a game-winning strip sack. And he said, that's been the play where someone on the defense steps up to a higher level and makes the key play to prevent something dangerous from happening. Today, there were like five of those plays. It doesn't stand out as much because what you remember is the missed field goal. But every missed field goal means that you're in field goal range. You're in scoring position. The ones that stand out to me are the quarterback hit by DJ Reader, the sacks by Trey Hendrickson, the coverage by Chidobe Awuzie in the end zone. The Bengals had those moments. And again, it was a unit as well that was good enough to win the game for the Bengals. They had an effort level, an ability to get to the quarterback, and a general structure, I would say, in pass coverage that they stuck to, a game plan that they stuck to the entire game. And while that cost them a couple deep balls over the very top to Adams, overall, all three units of that defense, all three parts of that defense, were at the level they need to be at for the Bengals to have the type of season they want to have.
Yeah, I thought the way that the Bengals defense settled in and adjusted gives me a lot of reason to believe that this unit is going to consistently be a defense that keeps the Bengals offense in games. And, you know, when I'm going through the breakdowns, it was 9-7 with 7 minutes to go in the second quarter. So obviously very close game, but then the Packers had that drive that Aaron Rodgers found Davante Adams in the end zone, but it was really Aaron Jones who kind of lit the Bengals up. And we're not used to kind of seeing the Bengals defense get gashed in the run game like they did on that drive. But then it was 16-7, and that's when I was telling you, you know, it looks like it was going to be one of those Aaron Rodgers and this Packers team's going to run away. But the next play, Joe Burrow, when he gets the ball, found T. Higgins. And right after that, they go no huddle. They find the play that we're talking about where Joe Burrow scrambles, finds Ja'Marr Chase 70 yards down the field, and we've got a 16-14 game at the half. Then here come the Bengals in the third quarter who got the ball, and it was not a great offense at first series of the third quarter, and then the Packers took a ton of time off the clock in the third quarter. It was a drive that took 7 minutes and 38 seconds off the clock that only ended in a field goal, which we were talking about. That was a huge defensive stand for the Bengals. And then Cincinnati is not really able to do anything offensively. A couple penalties. Just not really anything that really stood out to end that third quarter. And then the fourth quarter was the fireworks. Joe Mixon has that great 8-yard touchdown run, which I thought, given we don't know the severity of Joe Mixon's ankle injury, but we know it was bad enough that he couldn't practice. But I thought that touchdown play from him really showed just his toughness level. What do you think?
What stands out to me about that drive is T. Higgins on the big third down. What T. Higgins does best at is his physicality to just like, just to beat you and to big brother you is a word I use with him because he's more physical. He's going to get the contested catch instead of you. And he's just going to get to the spot quicker as well because he's faster than people give him credit for. He had one of those on an out route to the left side on a key third down play at midfield. And then on the 2-point conversion as well, they've run that play before. Higgins scored a touchdown on that play against Minnesota. Higgins scored a touchdown on that play last year against Cleveland, where there's just patience at the line of scrimmage. They work on it all the time in practice. Higgins, one move, two move, becomes Burrow's third or fourth read, and he's there because that's what T. Higgins is able to do. So it was good to have him back for the Bengals. He contributed. He did his part on that drive. An impressive drive from Burrow to tie the score and make the 2-point conversion and to set up overtime.
Well, and the other thing that stood out about that drive was I was just talking about that second quarter drive for the Packers, but this was a 7-minute and 53-second drive that the Bengals had. And the best defense against an Aaron Rodgers team is to keep him on the sideline. And that's when things started to get interesting because the Bengals tie it up. It's 22-22. The next offensive series for the Packers ends in a Mason Crosby missed field goal. And that's where the kicker situation started to get a little bit dicey. So we'll go through them all, but Mason Crosby misses the 36-yard field goal. The ensuing play, Joe Burrow finds Tyler Boyd, and the Bengals look like they're going to start doing some things. And then they rattle off a 57-yard field goal attempt by Evan McPherson, and it looked like that was going to be the approach with Rodgers because you didn't want to give him too much time on the field. Zach Taylor, they tried everything in their power to run out that clock and just give Evan McPherson the smallest amount of time so you didn't have what happened to the 49ers where you give Aaron Rodgers the ball back and he makes you cry. Evan McPherson misses that goal. So that's now two field goals missed in the fourth quarter, and to overtime we go where things were just crazy. So let's talk about overtime, Charlie. First play of the game in overtime, Bengals get the ball. Joe Burrow threw, in my opinion, I think his worst interception of the season. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the ones in Chicago weren't his fault, and I can't think of any others. So, I mean, it reminds me of an interception we saw in training camp where Trey Hendrickson dropped off the line of scrimmage. That's something that does kind of thwart Burrow when you mix up coverage at the line of scrimmage and you have guys kind of where they're not supposed to be. That's probably a challenge for any quarterback, but you have noticed that with Burrow this season.
Yeah, it was one of those where it was hard to explain what he would have possibly been trying to do. It just, I asked Zach Taylor about it following the game, and he said he didn't see the linebacker Devondre Campbell on the back side. Well, then the Packers get the ball back and it's their turn to potentially go win the game, and Mason Crosby misses the 40-yard field goal, so the Bengals get the ball back again. They go really run heavy here to start their second possession in overtime. Burrow finds Chase again for a big 21-yard play, which gets them in good field position. They then try and go back-to-back with Joe Mixon runs. Then here comes Evan McPherson for the 49-yard field goal attempt. Wide left, no good. Here come the Green Bay Packers with 4 minutes and 14 seconds, and at this point, was anybody going to win the game? I actually thought this game might actually end in a tie. Aaron Rodgers, He really wasn't impressive in overtime, but he took a big sack on second down that bumped the Packers back pretty far. That was a Trey Hendrickson play, which I thought he played really well all game. But then Aaron Rodgers found his good old buddy Randall Cobb for a 15-yard play that got the Packers into field goal position, in which Mason Crosby finally hits a 49-yard field goal to win the game.
I want to go back to two specific series. I think the Bengals had their two worst series of the entire season late in the fourth quarter and on their last drive of overtime. What they did do, and more specifically what they didn't do to put Evan McPherson in the best position to be successful, was the reason they lost the game. McPherson is a very good rookie kicker. But why do you settle at the 39-yard line and the 32-yard line when you can do more? I'll go back to two plays. So the Bengals have 2nd and 10 at the Green Bay 47. On second down, it's just a short check down to Pirine. On third down, it's a run right up the middle. That's a third down from the 42-yard line. I think they only ran the ball there to make sure Green Bay used their last time out. They did, but the result is a 39-yard or field goal from the 39-yard line that McPherson missed. It's a 57-yarder, which is unlikely. Then to overtime. First down from the Green Bay 41. What do the Bengals do? Run, run, run.
Yep.
They get to the 32. Let's go back to what we were saying earlier in the podcast. The Bengals today broke the run-pass balance they'd established all season. They were finding new ways to create horizontal expansion of the field, to create the vertical dimension on deep balls to Jamar Chase, more plays to T. Higgins down the field, etc. The Bengals have more ways they can beat you, and you shouldn't settle for the 32 or the 39-yard line just so you can get the Packers to use one more timeout or just because you're comfortable with McPherson missing a field goal from 32 yards out. This game was Mason Crosby, one of the better kickers, one of the more experienced kickers in the NFL, missing chip shots. That should be a reminder that you need to be in the best possible position to win the game. And with the Bengals play calling down the stretch, they didn't put Evan McPherson in the best position to be successful.
Yeah, I agree. I thought they got super conservative late, and it was a little... I knew what Zach was trying to do, but at the same time, go with what got you there in the first place. And that was your explosive play passing attack. But I want to talk about something since we're talking about the Bengals offense. Looking at the score right now between the Browns and Chargers game, the Browns scored 42 points on the Chargers, who have a very good defense. The Bengals, I want to see more from this offense. There are no moral victories in the NFL, and the players and coaches said as much following the game. And I know there's the argument, well, they played the Packers competitive. Sure, but that's to be expected. Where I'm going with this is it's now time to rip the Band-Aid off of this offense. You are going to need to score more than 22 points to win in the AFC North when you look at what the Browns are doing, what the Ravens are doing, and if you want to contend in the AFC, look at the Bills, the Chiefs. Those offenses put up 30 points or more on a regular basis. And you were just talking about that play where the Bengals didn't really put Evan McPherson in the best position to win. That all goes back to it's time to rip the Band-Aid, in my opinion, off on this offense and really take the training wheels off of Joe Burrow and really stretch the field with these receivers because nobody can cover Jamar Chase right now.
I think that's a very interesting comment, especially because today, I think, was a day that they tried to do that. Today was a day where they went full 2020 mode and beyond with a Burrow-focused game plan, with a passing game-focused game plan. They weren't using the runs as aggressively on, say, second and long. They were putting the ball in the hands of Burrow more often. And it's a position that the Bengals were successful at points in the game. And it's a position that they weren't successful at early in the game. So there's more they can do. I don't think the offensive line played well enough. Mm-hmm. I think the running backs and pass protection remains one of the most under the radar weaknesses mm-hmm. of the Bengals. It came up again today on a sack on Burrow. Burrow was sacked too often. Plays just didn't develop for a number of reasons as well. There's just a lot. I agree. There's a lot that needs to go better.
Yeah. I'm going to be interested to see, and it's going to be hard to tell over these next two games because, right, they're playing the Detroit Lions, in which the Bengals should roll over the Lions. It might be a close game because the Lions seem to somehow play everybody close, but they can't win. But then you talk about the Ravens and the Jets, which don't have, outside of Baltimore, these teams don't have a defense that is really formidable, in my opinion. But if the Bengals aren't able to kind of get on a roll here and get into a rhythm offensively, I just kind of feel like at this point, I'm not sure what to make of the Bengals offense. I haven't seen enough themes other than Joe Burrow and Jamar Chase on the deep ball seems to be working. When you think back in not just this game, the landscape of what the Bengals have put on the field in the 2021 season so far, what do you think this offense does good and what do you think that they need to do better to start really reaching the heights that they're going to need to?
That's a good question. The deep ball to Jamar works. The out route to T. Higgins works. I'm going to defer to the back of Tyler Boyd's baseball card. I know he didn't have, he wasn't a target guy today, but I do think what he's able to do and what he's just proven he can do for the past like 4 years over the slot, making physical catches over the middle, is something they're really going to be able to rely on as well. But what we haven't seen is all three receivers clicking at the same time.
Right.
We haven't seen, I expected more of Chase and Boyd specifically with yards after catch stuff that they haven't done. Like CJ Uzama probably has more yards after catch than anyone this season. I think that they were at times today a little too tight end reliant, a little too reliant on a leak to Drew Sample, a leak to, or a screen to CJ Uzama. And I think as well, like they're still figuring out the best ways to be productive just overall and to keep defenses off balance when Joe Mixon isn't in the game. I think that's a weakness as well. Being less predictable depending on the personnel you have in, play design in those situations as well. Using the play action out of a under center formation more is something they've had success with and could turn to more. There's just a lot, but, so far, it's a B offense.
Mm-hmm.
I expected a B plus or an A minus, but also with the defense playing the way it is, it's less of a concern. But that's going to be very interesting to dig deeper into. What does the offense need to be better at specifically? What are the areas they're going to turn to because those are their strengths?
Well, and that's why I think you bringing up the receivers all clicking in one game. Obviously, there's going to be times where one receiver has more targets than the other. They all can't. There's only one ball. But for Tyler Boyd to not have one target until the end of the third quarter, in my opinion, when he's coming off of a performance against the Jacksonville Jaguars on Thursday night, which was one of the best of his career, I couldn't quite figure that one out. And I'm interested to ask Zach Taylor about it tomorrow. And I know that there was probably matchups or they wanted to get T. Higgins more involved. But if you're able to get Tyler Boyd, T. Higgins, and Jamar Chase all going and the attention that those guys are going to get, I mean, who can stop them? But when you take Tyler Boyd or one of them kind of out of the game plan, I don't know, I kind of feel like you're shooting yourself in the foot and not using one of the weapons that could put you in the best position to really be that explosive offense.
So my thought is, and again, I'm not quite sure how and the strategy they used to do it, but it's very clear the Packers were forcing Burrow to target guys who weren't wide receivers. Piron had 5 targets. Uzama had 2. Evans had 2. Drew Sample had 4. 4 for 9 yards, which is shocking. The Bengals kind of had to check down so many times, even against a Packers secondary that was extremely depleted. And that was very surprising, and especially surprising that the guys they had to turn to when they were thrown over the middle of the field weren't the guys who were their playmakers.
Yeah. So definitely keep your eye on that. We'll be talking about this as the season goes on, but the Bengals offense is going to, in my opinion, really have to get going on a more consistent basis. And I thought Zach Taylor said something that backs up what I'm saying. When he was asked about the offensive performance as a whole today, he said that there were some lulls. Seems to be a lot of lulls happen with the team. When was the last time we saw, I think maybe Pittsburgh was the game where for 4 quarters, we really didn't see a giant lull by the Bengals offense. So that's what I'm talking about. Zach Taylor saying there were some lulls there in the first half when we were trying to just get a first down and couldn't quite get in rhythm. Joe Burrow is hard to stop when he's in rhythm. So I'm going to be interested to see the way that this offense progresses throughout the rest of the season, but the defense continues to impress me. They've got some things to clean up in terms of what their plan is going to be for an opponent's number one wide receiver, because like we talked about, yes, Davante Adams is good, but you can't win a game if a wide receiver goes for 200 yards very often. You only can get so lucky, and the Bengals are going to start playing some really good wide receivers. Davante Adams isn't the last wide receiver that's really impressive that they'll see, but they're getting good production from Trey Hendrickson, which is huge. We didn't see quite the game from the interior defensive linemen that we've been used to seeing. Larry Ogunjobi was kind of in and out of the game with an injury. You brought up DJ Reader's hit, but we've seen them kind of take over, and that wasn't really on display. Are you concerned about what you saw from the interior of the Bengals defensive line, or you think this is just kind of a one-game sample?
I'll just be honest. Like, the Bengals' defensive line is solid, but it doesn't quite have the transcendent talent to day in, day out, game in, game out, be a game-wrecking unit. The Bengals don't have that. They've invested in their defensive line a lot, but none of it. It was a bunch of number twos and number threes, and those twos and threes have complemented each other. They've made up for each other's strengths and weaknesses, and they've had moments, but you can't rely on that to be the strength of the Bengals just because that's not quite the way the roster was constructed.
Mm-hmm. Well, we also got to see a lot from the secondary today. It was the first time, and you were tweeting about this before the game, that almost all of their secondary was healthy in the lineup. Trey Waynes was back today. Cheeto was back. Jesse was back. Mike Hilton, Von Bell, all those guys were back and healthy. And that's why I was a little shocked that they weren't able to, you know, really bracket Devontae Adams and really slow him down, because it was obvious that Aaron Rodgers is going to try and get Devontae Adams involved in this game.
Yeah, we learned that they view Chidobe Awuzie as their true number one cover corner. And to be honest, I thought he did a pretty decent job. We'll get into that later in the week. But just overall, there was just too much open space and too many missed and lost assignments. That was my big takeaway. And then as well, just Aaron Rodgers making the two throws to Adams over the middle, over the very, very, very tippy top that few other quarterbacks can make. Those were a problem in the secondary, but generally for most of the game, with the exception of the one run in overtime, the Bengals stopped the run at a high level again, except, of course, for that one run in overtime. But again, more to like, but nothing really to love right now with the defense.
I think that's a really good way to end it. A lot to like, but not a lot to love. Well, that's it for Charlie and I on this week's episode of the Bengals Beat podcast. Recap this game. Charlie and I will be back to preview the upcoming game with the Bengals and the Detroit Lions, as the Bengals are about to go on a 3-game road swing. So it'll be important for the Bengals to learn how to win some of these games on the road. And there'll be a lot to talk about. So we will talk to you guys next time.